Good afternoon. Welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on July 20th, 2021, and time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we're holding meetings remotely. In our meeting today, we have Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Commissioner Tony Olson, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Joe Fina, our Acting General Counsel, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Ward, and Lila Wall, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Sorry, what did you say?
Just for the record, Mr. Fina is not on quite yet.
Okay. So joining us shortly will be Joe Fina, our Acting General Counsel. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. We'll ask for questions or comments on agenda items as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting while others may require more time. Please indicate you would like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if joining by phone, dial *9 and attendees will be called upon to speak at the appropriate time. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
I have none.
Okay. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Comment from the public is item 3 on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first we have item 2, recognition declarations, with the General Manager's Life Saving Award. And we have Austin Grant to start us off this morning with this. I'm sorry, Guy Payne.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. The Joint Safety Team.
Guy, we can barely hear you.
I think you just need to come closer to the mic, maybe, Guy.
Is that any better?
Yes.
Okay, this is Guy Payne, AGM of D&E Services. The Joint Safety Team unanimously voted to recommend the General Manager's Award for Heroism to the Line Department Entry Helper Austin Grant. I won't get into too many details, but Austin was flagging on a job in the Mukilteo area, Mukilteo Boulevard, and there was a car that came into the work site at a high rate of speed. Austin was paying attention to his surroundings. He was able to alert the other PUD employees that were in the work zone. And Austin was able to get himself into a safe area. The vehicle sped into the work zone, hit outriggers on bucket trucks. Employees were up in the bucket. They had time to brace themselves because of Austin's warning. Other employees on the ground were able to get out of the way. The vehicle hit outriggers, crashed in the work site, actually flipped on its side. Police were on the scene immediately because they had pursued the vehicle as it sped through one of their speed paths. It's this kind of awareness of our surroundings, situational awareness, and you know, the desire to look out for fellow employees that really, really is ultimate in safety. This was a very, very dangerous situation. No PUD employees were injured. And just my hat's off to Austin and then the other crew members that helped assist the police and the first responders to make the scene safe where they could help rescue the individual that actually crashed the vehicle as well. So huge kudos to Austin. Well-deserved. Award here, and thank you, Austin, and to the entire crew on that job. You know, we deal with so many hazards, electrical, fall hazards, mechanical hazards, rotating equipment. We have all of these hazards that we deal with, and then we're trying to, you know, dodge crazy drivers or really bad drivers at the same time. So thank you, Austin, for really having, as the joint safety team put it in their report, your head on a swivel, knowing what's going on in your surroundings and responded very quickly and appropriately to protect coworkers as well. So congratulations. And anything Austin would like to add, I would be glad to.
Yeah, thanks, Guy. I really wasn't expecting any award or anything. You know, I was just doing my job, trying to keep everybody safe. So this was kind of a out of the blue surprise for me, but here it is. So thank you, everybody, that nominated me for this award. I really appreciate it.
And I would echo Guy's comments that Austin, your actions really embody what we talk about all the time, and that's looking out for each other and taking care of each other. And you did that at a very, very critical time that without your actions, there could have been pretty serious consequences for folks, including yourself. So again, just a huge kudos for your actions and quick response. And then also a huge kudos to the foreman, Daryl Snyder, and the entire crew for the actions that they took after the car had crashed to help police and fire make things safe. So again, all around, just a really good example of what our folks do every day to take care of each other. So thank you, Austin. Really appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, it's a team effort. You know, everybody after the accident made sure everybody was safe, and everybody came together to help the driver. Police response was perfect because they were there already there. So, you know, their response was good. But yeah, it's a team effort, and we got to keep everybody safe. And, you know, they're all our friends, and we want to see them go home to their family. So thank you.
Right on.
Commissioners, we'll comments, questions?
Yeah, I just, awareness is something that is, you can't really put a price tag on that. And we're really grateful to you, Austin, for the fact that you remained alert and you did exactly what you needed to do. So just thank you.
Commissioner Olson, I did have an observation. You know, when reviewing this in our packet, I'm thinking, you know, there are folks like me that freeze when faced with those kinds of situations. So I so admire someone who can stay on point, react immediately, and, you know, have a clear sense of what needs to be done. And I really sincerely admire that. Mm-hmm. Great work for you and your team.
Yeah, Austin, I know you know that everyone has stop work authority, but I don't expect that you anticipated that you'd have to use it in just a split second. So wonderful, quick thinking, and, you know, I'm really, really pleased that you're getting this award, and thank you so much for protecting your team members.
Yeah, thank you. It definitely could have been the outcome could have been a lot worse with the lineman working right there in the three phase. Luckily the driver didn't hit the pole very, you know, hard enough to make a big impact, but it definitely could have been a lot worse.
It's a good thing that you have such a big voice.
Yeah.
Because you yell at them.
That's the military background voice, yeah.
That's all great. Right.
One last comment. And Guy touched on this a little bit, but our field crews have to deal with a lot of hazards, electric and fall and such. But I really believe one of the most dangerous hazards that they have to deal with on a daily basis is the traffic. Mm-hmm. And especially with the number of folks that are texting or calling while driving and just the distractions, it really is a serious hazard. And Austin and the folks that are really on point, as an example in this situation, to keep the crew safe, really, really do play an important role from a safety perspective.
All right, thank you. Well, let's give Austin a big round of applause. Thank you, Austin.
Thank you.
Next up, we have item 3, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. So first up, we have someone with a phone number ending in 1110. Go ahead and unmute yourself. This is the 425 number that ends in 1110.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is James Deal calling from Linwood. 425-774-6611. And the email address is jamesdeal@jamesdeal.com. The website is jamesrobertdeal.org/smartmeters. So let me report to you what happened in New Mexico when there was a proposal by a private utility to put in smart meters. It went before the New Mexico Public Regulatory Commission, and they ruled as follows. The utility company did not demonstrate that smart meters would save money, did not demonstrate that smart meters would produce energy efficiency, did not show that consumers want smart meters, did not evaluate alternatives, did not say how smart meters would protect customer data privacy, did not address security issues. All of these criticisms apply to Snohomish County PUD and this reckless plan to install smart meters. So I want to switch the topic now to what's going on in Edmonds. So Singular, which is AT&T, wrote a letter or applied with the city council to put up 5G cell towers all over town. Cell tower, a small cell tower on every block. They're not really small, they're the size of a refrigerator, and they have to put up special poles to hold them. But they're on every block. They'll be right outside your window. So the problem with this is that they are extremely powerful and broadcast at frequencies that are very high. They're very hot. And the legal issues make it clear, although some of the members of the city council voted for it, 5-1, voted to roll over and allow themselves to be polluted by this high-frequency broadcasting. What the law says is that wireless companies can sue and force a city to allow 5G towers, but only if there are currently significant gaps in coverage and provided that there is no other less intrusive alternative. Of course, there are no gaps in coverage. Cell phones work all throughout Edmonds, and there are other less intrusive alternatives, such as fiber optic connections to each house. The irony is that these small cell towers must be connected to each other by fiber optic. So fiber optic will run from the source to the small cell towers, which will be 50 feet away from the house, which doesn't have fiber optic, unless you pay for it, unless it's offered in your neighborhood. So I've been trying to communicate with the mayor that don't let yourself get railroaded into a fraud. And the same thing applies to the Snohomish County PUD. This is all an unnecessary because it costs so much. There are better alternatives such as self-reporting, and you need to spend the money doing fiber optic throughout the county. And so that's my comment for today. I think you guys need to put your thinking cap on and don't let yourself be intimidated, misled, defrauded, waste money on smart meters that are always on. They wear out in a few years. And they're completely unnecessary. I don't know why people get transfixed by some cockeyed idea. This all goes back to the Obama administration when they were looking for shovel-ready projects. So Big Wireless piped up and said, oh, we've got this ready. So it's not ready. It's not ready at all. It's going to make a lot of people sick. It's going to devalue property. And you have this opt-out procedure that doesn't allow people to opt out if they live in an apartment. In a condominium, an individual can opt out, but the whole association cannot opt out. So there you are, and you bought a property. It had no smart meters. The easement did not provide for meters that were not grounded and not surge protected, and they caught fire, and that Lloyd's of London will not insure against, so you can't get insurance, and the PUD is going to be sued down the road for all these people who get sick for irradiating them. This is James Deal, 425-774-6611, jamesdeal@jamesdeal.com, jamesrobertdeal.org/smart-meters. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Deal. Next up, we have Gayla Shoemake. Go ahead, Gayla.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Gayla Shoemake from Edmonds, Washington, and have a couple of comments. First of all, I wanted to let you know that I sometimes have had difficulty with the website, trying to find things and locating what I needed. So thank you very much for this reorganization and redesign. I think it will be very helpful to people like me who don't always get their information or have to spend a lot of time. So thank you for doing that. And I would like to just comment on Commissioner Wolf's comment about when commissioners respond to projects that are coming up. I think it is inconsistent. I think sometimes when there's a project coming up, the commissioners are given early information about it and they can give feedback. Other times, by the time the report comes to the commission, it's about finished. And so any comments that the commission would give at that point kind of upsets things. So I would just like for you all to look at when the commission is able to give feedback, and that the earlier might be better, because then it doesn't, it gives a sort of a position or a direction for the project, rather than doing it later when the project is about finished, and then it kind of upsets all the planning that has been done. So it seems to me there's been inconsistency in that, and I just suggest that you all be a little more consistent in when the commission, when the commissioners get the information. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Gayla. Next up, we have item 4, our consent agenda. 4A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of July 6, 2021. 4B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. 4C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I will call for a motion.
I move approval, but I will have a question when it's appropriate.
So first off, are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Hey, I'm not seeing any hands going up. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
Yeah, just a couple of things. As I was scanning the expenditures and payments, on page 146, we paid, we paid $82,787.13 to Northwest Energy Alliance, Inc. And I wonder if somebody could tell me what they do for us. I mean, it's not like the millions that we spend sometimes, but does anybody know? And I didn't have time to research that. Northwest Energy Alliance, Inc. Are those dues or what?
I'm not sure exactly what that's for, but we can, we'll take that back as a question and provide a response.
Yeah, because it's an alliance, it makes me think that maybe it's an association fee, but that seems like a lot of money. So, and excuse me. So page 151, Howard Industries, 105,124. Again, is that for distribution transformers?
I know Howard Industries does provide us transformers. So my guess would be yes. Oh, I see Clark's on there. So
I did actually go online and look at their website, and they do a lot of different things. They also do a lot of signage, you know, really specialty work. And so I just was wondering about that. And then let's see, SPX Transformer Solutions. Of course, we need good transformers. And there's an amendment to their contract for $1,500,000, which brings their contract maximum up to $14,700,000. And it says it's for capital projects. So would those be mostly in the North End? Capital projects in general, maybe somebody who knows about those capital projects could let me know. Anyway, 14 million.
I have some staff that are raising their hand, Commissioner Logan. I believe Bob Anderson.
Oh, okay. I will unmute you, Bob. Or I think you're unmuted. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, commissioners. I'm the manager of substation engineering, and I have Sanjeev Farwaha, who is our equipment engineer, and he will give you a brief explanation of what the transformers are required.
For what project?
Hi, good afternoon. This is Sanjeev Farwaha.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, so we have three projects for next year. One is Harbor Point, Edgecombe, and Sky Valley. So these three projects we have for next year's, and we are also trying to buy one extra transformer because the lead time of the transformer is more than 1 year now.
Oh.
And it's really gone that bad due to pandemic and other situations. So we're trying to be conservative and just want to make sure that we have enough resources in hand just in case something happens.
Okay, thank you. So Sky Valley and Harbor Point, did you say?
Yes, please. And Edgecombe.
Edgecombe, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure. And Commissioner Wolf, real quick, Edgecombe, we're double banking the Edgecombe substation, and that is to feed the new load in North County, as you were mentioning.
Okay, thanks a million.
All right, commissioners, are there any other questions on the consent agenda?
This is Commissioner Olson. I do have, please bear with me, a couple of questions. Was Commissioner Wolf talking about the item that's in the bid award or on the warrant list?
Commissioner, this is Clark from Contracts and Purchasing. Those would be related in that the award we're making is a new award for Howard for distribution transformers, and the payable amount was for purchases on a previous contract.
Okay, so I have questions on the bid report. Where is that little puppy? Their MBA, are you getting some work done on MBA? It's on the bid award report.
Are you talking about the retrofit for the?
Yeah.
Yes.
And my only question on that was, don't we typically, I know you're retrofitting, but don't we typically like have a couple of spares in inventory if we need them in emergency? Do we still do that?
I think Bob or Sanjeev could probably answer the question on this one specifically again on why we retrofitted this one or why we're
attempting mine is completely, it's just a question. I maybe I'm mixing these up with, but I thought that we always, in case of emergency, had a couple of sitting on the pads waiting to be used. Am I mixing this up with something else?
Commissioner Olson, this is Jason Zyskowski. Oh, and I see Bob's unmuted, so I'll let him go ahead and answer.
Hi, Commissioner. This is Bob Anderson, Manager of Substation Engineering again, and I'm here again with Sanjeev Farwaha, our equipment engineer. And typically we keep one or two spare transformers on the hard stand. Sanjeev, do you want to just give a brief explanation of how we rotate those in and out?
I did not understand the question. So is the question regarding retrofitting contract?
No. I clearly understand. I was just curious that we continued the practice of having a couple of the large MVAs in stock.
That's
for immediate change up. That was my only question.
Yes, that's correct. Actually, we have a policy of keeping two 28 MVA transformers on hard stand at any given time, just in case something fails, then we have that transformer to take it there and replace it.
Because like you said, they have a long lead time.
Right. That's correct. We already have two actually in-house right now.
Yeah. Well, Tony likes that a lot. I do have a question on, it's a rejection for power transformer FR3 retrofit. There's a rejection. And my only question is, just in general, I seem to be seeing a lot of rebids. And it's more frequently than in the past. Is there something going on here?
This is Clark Langstrad again. The rebids that I think you're probably referring to that we've had several on the agenda in recent months are due to just lead time and price increases that all utilities across the country are having trouble keeping up with in terms of just supply chain constraints brought on by that pandemic, and then business being slow to recover from that in terms of bringing staff back online and workers for production of that equipment back online. And there's also some raw material shortages that have always been sort of right on the edge, but the pandemic pushed them over. Copper is one of them. Resins for plastic is another. So we're a little bit behind the curve because those constraints have been happening faster and more often and on a wider range of materials than we've ever experienced before. So our bid specs have had to adjust multiple times, especially on the distribution transformer bid. I think it took us three times to get a bid that would stick.
Thank you for that explanation. That's all I have, President Logan. That's all I have.
Julie Anderson, you had your yourself unmuted for a second. Did you have something to add to one of these questions?
No, Commissioner. I was just on standby if there was any specific question regarding the rejection of the FR3 bid.
Oh, actually, Bob, I'm sorry. I was asking Julia.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Julia Anderson, Senior Manager, General Accounting, District Controller. It's my understanding there's a question on a vendor that we paid under the checks and warrants. And so I was...
Yeah, Northwest Energy Alliance.
Okay. I'm going to have to do some research on that off the top of my head. I'm not sure what exactly we're paying that vendor for, but I will follow up with an email.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any more questions or comments, commissioners, about the consent agenda? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item five, items for individual consideration. 5A, consideration of a resolution authorizing the Assistant General Manager, Distribution and Engineering Services to execute an engineering analysis agreement with the Central Puget Sound Regional Transit Authority to provide engineering design and planning services to assist Sound Transit in developing the Everett Link Extension Project. I will call for a motion.
I move approval, but again, I'll have some comments or questions.
Okay. We have Alex Chorley here available to answer any questions. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. First, is there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands raised. Are there any questions or comments from you commissioners?
I read most of the information that came with this resolution. And my question is, I've had contacts from people who want to know what's happening, what's going to happen to the interurban trail. And they're imagining, you know, being out on the bike and the trains coming by. And so I said, well, I don't know. I think, you know, you just need to check it out and ask your questions. So one question I have, and it's a big one, where does the responsibility lie for the public process? So if people do have concerns, again, as Gayla Shoemake mentioned, we don't want to wait until it's too late. If we do have people who want to give input, or if we, the commissioners, need to ask questions. So I'm assuming that Sound Transit does a lot. I know that they're very public, they're very transparent, and they have a lot of public meetings. So is it the case that they are going to handle the public process on this? Or are we going to do that partly ourselves?
Hi, commissioners. This is Alex Corey. I'm in our transmission engineering group. I can maybe answer some of your question. In general, yes, I believe it will fall to Sound Transit to handle the bulk of the public outreach. As we progress significantly further into this project, there may be some pieces that are PUD responsibility, but my opinion for the next 4 to 5 years, this is all kind of going to be spearheaded by Sound Transit. They're getting input from the PUD, City of Linwood, other related parties, and then it will be on Sound Transit to put this information out as part of their, you know, environmental impact statement and all that sort of stuff. And I think they said they're planning on a 3 to 4 year process for that. So it will be slow to come, but for the most part, I think they're the ones taking responsibility.
That was what I had imagined. So, I mean, I'm just telling people, just get involved, follow the process. And some of them are wanting to give input about the route or the route for the train. And it's my understanding that as soon as it leaves from King County into Snohomish, it's our project.
Yes, that's true. I think it's slightly complicated by the fact that we actually own the trail as opposed to this being PUD facilities in the right of way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just prepare yourself. There probably will be people asking a lot of questions.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
This is Commissioner Olson. I just have a question. Can you tell me, we're providing engineering, they're purchasing engineering services from us. Is that correct?
Correct.
And we will be reimbursed for that. And would this be like we engineer for the water? Have we done this before?
As far as I know, for the Sound Transit related stuff, we really haven't. You know, we are used to somebody coming to us with a plan and saying, we need you to move your facilities in these spots. This, they're early enough in the process that we are providing them with kind of assistance in selecting what their route might be for the light rail. So we are kind of identifying conflicts, but at this point, we're not even to the point where we are designing anything necessarily. We're kind of just advising Sound Transit as part of their route selection.
Okay. My question, as I read the agreement, you know, as you move down the road with this, if you're providing services, then what is our liability or accountability in terms of, do we carry a burden with this in terms of providing the service, in terms of, I guess I'm not being clear. Let me see here. Engineering, it speaks to all costs of labor, including not limited to taxes, insurance. So when an engineering firm is providing services, they assume, do they not, some responsibility and accountability for the quality of what they're providing? Does that relate to this kind of an arrangement?
Yeah, I suppose it kind of does. I would say that the next step, where we are actually
designing,
you know, physical changes that are going to take place with our system and in the county, that's probably more where that would come into play. At this point, we are mostly just going to be providing them information about our system and where our facilities are.
Okay.
And very high level impacts, you know, because to play into what their budget planning is going to be.
Yeah. And those would all be completely separate agreements that are negotiated, and I'm sure we'll have all of the bells and whistles attached to it to protect the utility.
Correct. The current link that Sound Transit's working on in Linwood has what was called a relocation agreement, which generally covers all of that. This is kind of the precursor to that, but it is a separate agreement.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Hearing no more questions, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6, our CEO General Manager report. Do you have a report for us today, John?
I do have a couple of items to share with you. First off, as you all will recall, we had the Washington State Long-Term Care Plan that was passed in 2019. And beginning in January 1 of 2022, the district will begin an employee payroll tax to fund that program. And this long-term care program is a mandate throughout the entire state of Washington, will be administered by the Employment Security Department. This year, the Washington State Legislature passed an amendment allowing a one-time only opt-out period for employees. In order to opt out of the Washington State Long-Term Care Program, an individual must have a qualified plan that will be substitute for the Washington plan. And they must have a plan in place before November 1st of 2021. So we are assisting employees who want to opt out. The HR team has worked with an internal team of legal, finance, the IBW, and others to select a long-term care plan employees may choose to enroll in. This plan would be entirely paid by the employee, but would allow them to opt out of the Washington State plan. The provider selected is Allstate, and the design of the plan includes features and enhancements over and above what the Washington State plan offers. Benefit communications are beginning next week, and the HR team will bring this back to the commission on August 3rd. So this is just a little bit of a preclude to that. Preparation continues. This is still in our HR group. Preparation continues for safety days in August. Because our safety culture includes employee wellness, the HR team is enlisting representatives from our various benefit and retirement vendors to join the event. They'll be on site and available to talk to employees. The compensation team continues to work with managers on reviewing new and or updated job descriptions. To date, we have approximately 50% of the job descriptions have been submitted as a first draft. We are expecting the remaining 50% in the next few weeks. Once completed, the new job descriptions will be used to do a comprehensive market pay study, and we'll continue to provide updates to the commission as this progress or project progresses. In our D&E group, we completed the 115 kV switches at Camino and Lake Chaplin substations. We removed the transformer at Payne Field substation, and that new transformer will be installed at the end of August. In our generation power rates and transmission, Snowpud is scheduled for a WEC audit November 8th through November 19th. The audit package has been received from WEC, and we are distributing audit information, coordinating appropriately, and working with WEC and staff on a number of questions around data transfer. And lastly, in our energy services group, a new program design incentive is to launch August 1st. The energy services is adding an administrative incentive across programs in the commercial industrial portfolio. The goal of these incentives is to return value to the trade allies and contractors for the administrative time and attention it takes to submit program paperwork. It will drive more consistent participation throughout the year and empower trade allies to hire or train dedicated staff for our programs, creating efficiency for our team as well. And our trade allies implement our program, so this incentive gives them more ability to advertise, staff, train, and promote work in our territory all year long. And we anticipate this providing more consistent quarterly results and limiting the need for bonuses and incentives at the end of the program year while supporting our local businesses that carry our results. And that is it, unless there are questions or comments.
Questions or comments on John's report, commissioners?
No, thank you.
Okay, next up we have item 7, commission business. 7A, commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
So I wonder if Allison, if you could help me remember what it was you said. I don't know where my notes are or if I even wrote, but you said you could, you might want to bring that up during commission business, and now I can't remember what it was. Do you recall what it was that was kind of an issue and you said, well, bring it up during commission business? If you don't, that's okay. I can do it probably through email, but maybe it was, I think in October, there's going to be a seminar or a workshop that I am very interested in attending, but you said, well, it's going to cost $500 and some, so you have to bring it up during commission business. But I guess I can do it at the next meeting because I don't remember all the details.
I don't recall that being recent that we talked about. We did talk about the Herald article that you didn't agree with, and I said that you'd have to take that up with the board, not me.
Oh, well, that's I think that has to do with the board linkage business. And let's just drop it for now. I do have some concerns about the fact that the commissioners are not allowed to have our own message if we want to, or if we want to suggest a change, that it's determined by CorpCom and it says it's coming from the commission, but it isn't. So, I mean, you know, it's just part of that ongoing lack of clarity about what are we allowed to say, what can we do, what can we speak. And I'm still working, you know, still trying to grasp how it really works, but also looking at how it should be, not just how it's always been. So let's just put it off for now, and we'll deal with it when we get to the board linkage policy discussions.
And if there is a class or a training you want to attend that costs money, yeah, bring that back at the next meeting. I don't recall one that we discussed.
Yeah, it had to do with commissioners. It was something for commissioners. But anyway, I thank you, and
okay,
I will rest my case.
Any other reports?
This is Commissioner Olson. I have a report, and also I failed to note in the beginning introduction of our afternoon session if there was anything to add to the calendar, to the agenda. This really isn't to add to the agenda, but will it be okay if after I give my report, I have a couple of other short items?
Sure.
Okay. Well, my report is participation in the virtual APPA conference, mm-hmm, on the 13th and the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, that behind the scenes, that was pretty complex in terms of the operation, and I was quite impressed for them pulling that off. I attended some stuff on return to work from COVID in a couple of instances. And also there was a session on education, and I did some others, but in terms of the COVID, in terms of, well, utilities, things have changed. How much do we take that back to post-COVID, to the workplace? And, you know, I've been gung-ho for a while about we need to capture this and we need to capture that. And there was some very thoughtful input mm-hmm. about the consideration of employees, the human factor. And that I'm thinking that for John, for you and the folks working on it, that's going to be a difficult call in terms of, do we modify the way we provide our service or the work environment? So I gained a better appreciation that it's just not a slam dunk. And I found that, well, for me, it was eye-opening, and that utilities, for the most part, there were a few that were making some minor adjustments to face-to-face customer service. But for the most part, most of them were returning to operation as usual. And they had some good reasons, a lot of it around the care for employees, and which opened up another whole realm of that I hadn't thought of. So I attended a couple of those because I was curious about what others are doing. And then the other one was on the whole thing of, let's see, reaching tomorrow's customers through education. But then it also included education programs that were offered. And I found, I think mostly they were smaller utilities, but there were a couple, Austin and SMUD, that were more advanced in terms of their programs. And this was in the schools. And I was going to speak to Snohomish, but we were so, you know, some of them were proud that they hit 1,000 students in a year, and we hit 40,000. But what I did was, after that, I was able to leave some information that a little bit about the history of our program, and it is more mature, and to, if they were interested, to contact the board office, and then that could send it on to our education group. Hope that's okay. Yeah. Where they can gain different perspectives. And I did find that, I think it was Austin again and SMUD, were actually a little farther along in looking to the future employees. And we are beginning to do that in terms of tapping in early in their in knowledge about career opportunities. And I think SMUD was quite a ways along on this, and actually I think had paid internships. But that was another thing I thought, well, okay, we're on the right track. Impressed with that. And I won't go on any further. Those were a couple of standouts for me. Thanks.
And did you had another item? Did you want to do that item now or after I give my report?
Capturing costs of COVID. I seem to recall that I came up with one of my bright ideas that really wasn't a very bright idea. John, can you capture for us, when this is all over, the cost of COVID? And again, through APPA and some additional reading, that is next to impossible. You know, there's some direct purchases and some things maybe while everybody's taking their vacation at once. So or people couldn't take vacations. So there's vacation cash outs that I'm assuming is accumulating. But there is so much of it that you really can't capture. So I just wanted to send the message that I recognize that. And I believe that there was a commitment toward the end of the year or early next year to come back with a report. And I thought, oh, well, they'll just charge it to a work order and it'll all be there. Well, that's not the case. So I just wanted to revisit it and send the message that I get it. And so I will be interested in receiving the report, but I do understand how difficult it is to capture those direct costs. And my final is a question. I read that Hampton had made another source for raw product. And they said in terms of their operation, they didn't anticipate anything in the near term. But my thought process was, if they up their production, does that in any way affect the generating unit that we have in there in terms of producing more power? And I don't need an answer now, but it was just I kind of thought, okay, they may be increasing their output. We have the unit in there. Is there some connection?
What I recall is that I read that article and said they're not going to be new jobs. They don't really expect anything much to change, but it gives them more security about the future supply for their, you know, for their long-term future. That's what I took out of that. So it looks like Jason has a comment.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm not aware of any, you know, additional generation that they'll be producing, but our team is actively communicating with them as we prepare to renew their contract in 2022. So if anything, you know, is going to be coming online, I'm sure we'll hear about it through that process.
Yeah. I just didn't know if there was a direct correlation between having perhaps a steadier stream of the raw material and the efficiency or output of the generating unit. Thank you. That's all I had.
And then for my report, also, of course, I went to the APPA, and I also noted, like Commissioner Olson, that with regards to education, we are out there, you know, in the forefront, working in the schools. So a lot of the people that participated in that forum, they hadn't really done anything, and thought it was an interesting idea to help young people understand what the industry is transitioning to, And then last Thursday, I was able to attend the groundbreaking for the Port of Everett's Norton Terminal, and that was interesting. It was interesting to understand that we have four substations in a very short area down there along the waterfront. So I had no idea we had so many substations and new load coming in with the terminal. So
I do have one additional comment about APPA, and I'm really glad that both of the other commissioners, all three of us attended, as well as John and quite a few other people. I attended one called The Future of Energy, Managing in the Face of Uncertainty. I imagine, John, maybe you were on that one too. But they had done a remarkable job in what they talked about, their field of vision, looking at 92 driving forces, including social, technological, environmental, economic, political, and there may be others, but they got it down, they boiled it down to 19 uncertainties and 4 reasonable hypotheses. And I'm going to go back, and these are recorded so that we can go back and watch them, any of those. If we were registered, which we all were, we can go back and review those again. That's one I want to look at again. I think our IRP team are right on it. already. You know, they've got it. They're geniuses, all of them. So that was good. And then there were some others. There was another one. I won't go on because I don't remember exactly, but oh, the one with the large utilities. I know that you were on that, John. And so all the battery storage that's coming in California was quite impressive, but still much less than they need, right?
Yep, much less.
Yeah, yeah.
And even the, I would call it the nameplate of the 2000 megawatts of battery storage that had been talked about, it's really not 2000 megawatts. It's more in the 800 range.
Yeah.
That is actual usable capacity. So yeah.
I think Barry Moline said 500.
Yeah,
it's like 500 megawatts of battery storage.
You can tell from that particular session, as well as many of the other sessions, resource adequacy in the West is still a very noteworthy issue and concern.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next is item 7B, our commissioner event calendar, which is one, page 174. Are there any changes to the event calendar, commissioners?
I don't know of any.
Okay, next is item 8, our governance planning calendar, which is on page 188A. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar, commissioners?
I don't think so.
Just one question that I would ask is with the memo that Kim prepared on the CCAs, are we good to take that off as a item to be scheduled?
Yes, you beat me to it. I was going to recommend that we take that item off because, you know, I was the one that asked to have it on there. And I think that completely satisfied me, some background on CCA and then some background on what's happening in Washington State or isn't happening in Washington State. Is that great. Fine, commissioners, if we take that off?
Yes, thank you. So why don't you tell the public what CCA stands for?
Community Choice Aggregation.
Which is related to the BPA, right?
No, it's related to, in some parts of the nation, others are able to sell power and the electric company just provides distribution. And so the customer gets two bills, one for the power from the third party and then one for the distribution from the utility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A nightmare scenario.
But, you know, I think Clark did a good job in his letter of there's really not the market forces. I think particularly for the publics, it's always possible that there could be for the IOUs, but and you know, the distribution system is pretty important in the Northwest. We have a lot of trees. So you want power and you want reliability. So you want to be able to pay for both. The other thing we had on here to be scheduled is we have our climate and environmental policy. And I'm suggesting that we move that from here and we move it into our workshop when we'll be able to have a workshop on all board policies.
Okay.
Does that work, commissioners?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay.
When you mentioned trees, Commissioner Logan, I was thinking about Jason and the fire program that they're working on. And I checked the DNR website where they have a list of all the PUDs who are participating in looking at what needs to be done to make our forests and our watersheds more resilient and less fire prone. And I was thinking it would be really good if we could participate in that. And we're not on the list right now, but it would be really good if somebody from Jason's team or whoever's, I've forgotten exactly all the people who are working on fire, the fire program, but maybe we should join that task force. I know there's a lot happening over on the east side, and Chelan and Klickitat, and I guess Klickitat's not Eastside, but there are quite a few PUDs involved, as well as some private utilities. And I think it's something I would like to suggest that we consider joining that task force.
Yeah, we can definitely look into that, Commissioner Wolf, and Mark Fleury and Gordon Hayslip are leading that effort now. But we'll make sure to communicate that to them. And
That's DNR.
Yep, DNR.
Yep.
And we do have some relationships with them, both in generation and I believe the fire mitigation teams that's putting the fire mitigation plan together has also been working with them on some of the mapping and things like that.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, commissioners, is there any further business to come before the board today?
I have nothing.
No, not from me.
Okay. Well, it is now, hearing none, it is 2:31 p.m. and I will now adjourn the meeting.